Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. This is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal legal system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. The Prison Journalism Project is an independent national nonprofit organization that trains incarcerated writers to be journalists and that publishes their stories so that they can serve as influential voices in the broader conversation about the prison legal system across the nation and in their communities. Joining me via Zoom for this edition of Prison Pipeline is the Prison Journalism Project's Director of Learning, Dr. Claire Hammoor. Claire, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Doug.
Now, tell listeners a bit about yourself and the work you do.
Sure. I'm Dr. Claire Hammoor. I've been working inside with folks for about 14 years in New York and in Colorado and in Tulsa. And now I'm the Director of Learning with Prison Journalism Project. So we are a national nonprofit working with folks inside. What else can I tell you about me?
Well, how'd you get into this work?
Oh, in high school, I went to a Franciscan Catholic high school and met Helen Prejean, who's known for Dead Man Walking. And that really, really powerful work. And so met her and a group of nuns who were really into social justice activism. And they really steered me toward thinking about this in undergrad. And I had no idea what this was. I knew that I wanted to be in death penalty abolition work somehow, but I didn't quite know what the entry point would be. And then in undergrad, I got really swept up into Theater of the Oppressed work, working with folks in that space, folks who do that work in prison and in communities. And then was recommended, hey, if you really want to go deep into this, you've got to think about going to NYU for grad school. And so NYU led me to rehabilitation through the arts, which maybe you know the movie Sing Sing that just came out, which is based on the work of RTA in New York. And so that's where I really learned how to work inside, how to be in community with folks inside.
And now you're here at Prison Journalism Project. Wow. Now, BJP does some really great work. There is so much I want to ask you about. I guess let's start with the top. You're the Director of Learning. Tell me about PJP Learning.
Yeah, PJP Learning works side by side with publishing. So a lot of what folks see is what's on our website, which is the stories that are being published. And our work in learning is how do we help train folks through the skills of journalism so that they can tell their stories in the most impactful ways. And so there are sort of two wings of the same bird working together. Learning is deeply influenced by what's going on in publishing. What are the skills that people need? What are the ways that we can support them? And vice versa. So we really work collaboratively across the board.
So now you've got the PJP Handbook, Prison Writer's Guide to Media Writing. And PJP also has a handbook certification course. I guess, tell me about the handbook first, what's all this about?
Yeah, so the handbook was created by our co-founders, Yukari Kane, Shaheen Pasha, who both have a slew of years of journalism, also journalism education experience. And so what they did was put, sort of distill their experience teaching outside and inside together into 14 modules for folks inside to be able to use. So we start with writing personal essays. What's the most sort of basic information about me and about my environment? And then we turn that into a reported essay. How do you begin to report a little bit? Maybe you're pulling in outside research, maybe you're doing interviews, you're doing some observation skills. And throughout the modules of the handbook, it gets more and more difficult as you're building journalism skills. And so what we have been doing is offering that as a certification course where folks are working all the way through. What we're pivoting to is to deepen that practice so that we can work more closely with a select group of writers. We have huge interest across the country, and we want to continue to publish many folks and to support them in their learning. And at the same time, we're thinking about what is the deep impact that we can make with a smaller group of folks. So we're thinking about working with them more closely over a few years. So they're still using the handbook. That's absolutely the foundation of all of our curriculum. But alongside that, they're doing outside assignments, and everything that they're doing has an eye toward it being published. So the hope is that we're supporting them in gaining the tools and at the same time putting their voice out there in the way that we can amplify.
Tell me about PJP Inside.
PJP Inside is our educational newspaper. And this is sort of a fun, it kind of encapsulates everything we're talking about today, I think. So PJP Inside has been an educational newspaper. It'll have activities for folks who are inside. It'll have some sort of games, some exercises, and there's always stories written by other folks inside that's the glue of the paper. And so what that has been so far is a full print newspaper that goes inside. We send out over 2,000 copies to folks all over the country. And with this new partnership with Adova, we're actually switching that into a magazine format so that it's easier to read on tablets. So if you're on a prison tablet, it's much more accessible to be able to flip through as you would a traditional magazine than it is a full spread newspaper. So we're switching the format. Actually, this next issue, I was just in a meeting about it right before this, we're switching to that magazine format. And we're also thinking about ways that we can integrate some of these other learning tools that we're really excited about, primarily on what are the durable skills that folks are getting. So we're thinking about life skills, we're thinking about job skills, all these that you learn by doing journalism, and particularly around literacy skills, because there's a huge literacy problem in our country. I mean, the latest stats that just came out, it's 31% of fourth graders are proficient readers, only 29% of eighth graders are proficient readers. But when you talk about folks inside, the last study that was completed in 2014, it's less than 5% of adults who are incarcerated are proficient readers. And what that does is that becomes a huge barrier to folks' ability to participate in society. If really simple examples, it's difficult to fill out forms. It's difficult to understand what the process of something is or where to go in a building. And this doesn't mean that people can't read at all. But what it does mean is that all those higher level literacy skills are really challenging for folks. And through PJP Inside, our goal is to offer curriculum that's at every level. So we're thinking about beginner level, as in what are things that are going to be accessible from middle school literacy level all the way through end of high school. And we label those throughout PJP Inside as what we call beginner, intermediate, and advanced, so that folks can self-select activities or stories that are going to most appropriately align with where they are, but it still is giving them an appropriate challenge so they can continue to grow.
PJP recently announced a partnership with Adova, which is a nonprofit based in Chicago doing education. What's that about? Tell me about that.
Adova is a nonprofit platform that offers educational programming to folks inside. There are a number of prison platforms that offer folks inside the ability to work through tablets or through wall-mounted computers. What is great about Adova is, from my perspective, they are one of the most ethical groups that is doing this. And particularly what I mean by that is they are giving the content that they have for free to folks inside. Now, a number of other platforms, they maybe charge per minute for content or per course or per video or things like this. And so what Adova does is they offer all their educational content for free for folks inside. The other great thing about Adova is they are now in 50% of jails and prisons in the U.S. So they have a reach of 1 million people who are incarcerated in the U.S. have access to Adova. I was actually looking up because I know you all are in Oregon, a couple stats. They're in 25 facilities in Oregon, and there are 10,000 unique Oregon learners that are on Adova right now per year is what that tends to be. So they have a pretty good reach. They're a little over half of jails and prisons in Oregon.
Am I right in that you're not just doing training with, you know, helping, you know, educating folks and training them as journalists? There's also a train the trainer aspect.
Yeah. So we also have a number of projects where folks inside are teaching each other these skills. So we've actually this year published a sort of guide that goes alongside the handbook. So whether you're a prison education leader or you're someone inside who's facilitating a peer-led course, there's a guide that we have so that folks who are most proximate to these issues and to everything going on inside should be ones that are helping to lead these conversations. And so our hope is that this is one supplement that might help them do that.
So some of the other learning projects that you're working on, PJ Post, I mentioned. It's your learning newsletter. What's that about?
Yeah, so PJ Post goes out. The goal is quarterly. It ends up being more than quarterly. And what's great about PJ Post is we do it all through e-coms. And so if you're inside and you have access to, it's sort of a a version of a text message or a version of an email that goes through a facility channel in order to reach you. So some of that happens on tablets. Some of those are actually printed out and then handed to residents inside. But PJ Post is our, hey, we've got some quick updates for you, or hey, here's a problem that we're seeing, or hey, here are some questions that we have and we want to answer at scale. So those are the type of communications we send broadly, and they can just arrive much more quickly than, for instance, PJP Inside, which also comes out quarterly, but PJP Inside is a full 16-page magazine, so it's a much bigger lift.
This is my conversation with Claire Hemmoor, PhD, Director of Learning at the Prison Journalism Project. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Tell me about some of your success stories.
Yeah, so we think about success in a lot of ways, and this is an interesting way to sort of gauge journalism, because traditionally success is seen as what are the stories that get maybe read the most? Maybe they become viral, maybe they go wild on the internet. And so that's one measure of success. But we also have a whole other slew of successes of folks who have, so for instance, I'll give a shout out to one of our writers in Colorado who is in the handbook cohort right now and is working on a personal essay and needed to go through, it ended up being four drafts of a personal essay before they completed it, okay? Now, to me, that is actually one of the best success stories of the year in terms of PJP Learning, because we have someone who is so committed to learning this skill to go through four drafts of correspondence-based learning, sending things back and forth, in and out, over and over again. And then ended up getting an advanced score on it, doing really, really well. So they were able to take the coach's feedback, they're able to incorporate that into their writing and turn that into a really coherent, powerful story. So I think thinking about resiliency is one way to measure success. I think about literacy and that sort of growth is one way that we can measure success. And we're actually starting to build out some assessments to do that. So we actually have some data alongside all of that. And then we also have these big stories that are published in The New Yorker or New York Times or, you know, things like the Guardian, Al Jazeera. And those stories we're really proud of because that's helping to shift the larger conversation about what life is like in prison, who's inside, and what that all means. And at the same time, from the learning perspective, which is just my angle here, I'm really proud of people that are resilient and are really learning and trying and building these skills, which take grit and determination over time.
There was a story you had recently that I thought was interesting, How I Wrote a Cookbook from Prison.
Cookbooks are so popular with audiences outside. So cookbooks and recipes and things like that take off. People online love them. We get lots of good buzz around recipes. But the thing that I love about recipes when they come out from inside is the recipe itself is always interesting, but the way that the recipe comes about, so that sort of introductory paragraph or two that's explaining what the journey of this recipe was or what are the circumstances that make this come about. I'm thinking about Nicole Fleetwood writes about carceral aesthetics, and one of the core points there is around lack, that things are lacking in prison, and yet out of that lack, people make really incredible magic happen. And I think that cookbooks and stories like that are one way that you can really see that.
You also work with prison newspapers there at PJP.
So we have this group called the Prison Newspaper Project, and the goal there is to gather as many prison newspapers as being published as possible to share them online broadly with folks to let people know what's available out there. We also, if there are volunteer opportunities or other ways to connect with those newspapers, we'll share that information as well. We're also doing some very small support with them. So we're giving some feedback on newspapers. We're giving a little bit of coaching that way. But primarily what we are is a repository to sort of speak to, hey, here's something really powerful that's happening journalistically inside. And if we can direct people to send energy, time, money, whatever it is, to those newspapers and facilities around the country, we're really excited about that.
Let's get back to Adobo. Tell me more about that, because that is, how does that all work? What are the resources that you're going to be providing?
So what we're thinking about first is, like I mentioned, PJP Inside. So putting the educational newspaper up, it'll be available for folks for free. There'll be a small thumbnail. They'll be able to click on it. Boom, you get to read the newspaper through a PDF or the magazine through a PDF format. But the other thing that we're working over the course of the summer is to build an introduction to journalism course, which we're thinking is our sort of module one. Someone may be interested in doing journalism. Maybe they're interested in telling true stories. Maybe they've done a bunch of it before. Maybe this is their first time investigating it. And so we're focusing that first module just on doing observations. What can you observe with your five senses around you? Can you turn that into a short scene or story? And then can you differentiate between what is true and what is not? And so, over the course of this mini course that we're putting together, there's an opportunity for folks inside to play with each of those things. And we're putting it together in a way that hopefully feels fun and interactive. There's a lot of online courses which are just sort of a slog where you're sort of doing multiple choice questions, and that's all that there is. And but what we're thinking is, how do we build a real narrative to this? How do we build something that seems exciting? Because for me, the most important thing in learning is getting people excited about what you're about to learn. If you have that excitement, you can get through any number of difficult bumps or literacy challenges or, oh, my tablet's not working today, or any number of issues. If there's something that feels exciting, there's a school I used to teach at that would call it intoxicating learning, which I think is really fun. And so what we're thinking is, how do we build a course that gets people really excited about learning these introductory journalism tools? And our hope is that over time, we'll continue to add to that. So the first tool is observation. Can you observe the environment using your five senses? Here's how you turn that into a true story. And then we can build more and more of those introductory journalism skills. We have at PJP, we've laid out 48 journalism competencies. We've got 45 literacy competencies, and then we have 8 of these durable skill kind of competencies. And so everything we do is aligned with that, helping our writers progress through those competencies. That's a little bit about where we're going there.
I'm kind of curious. One thing, the PJP Inside, so you're switching it over to a magazine format so it works better on the web. Is there any thought about helping with people, learning anything about HTML, learning about some of the web generating content, doing working with the web content, or is that a step that's going, since they're incarcerated, that might be a little tricky, or is it, yeah.
It is a little tricky. It's also just a little bit, we're very mission focused, so we're really tight on the brief in terms of journalism. But there are lots of great groups out there. And actually, I was in peeking through what's available on Adobo. There are some of those introductory type courses that other groups are offering, which is really wonderful. So we're by far not the only educational group that's on Adobo or offering content there. And so there are some groups that offer, whether they're like micro pathways or micro badges that folks offer, but there are other introductory courses to things like coding or to something like that that could be really a transferable skill when folks come home.
So, how can people keep up with the work that you're doing and stay informed? The website, social media, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so would love to encourage people to go. It's prisonjournalismproject.org. And I think the best thing to do is sign up for our newsletter when you're there. It's really easy to do on the website, but we're also across social media. I'll give a special shout out to Blue Sky, though. So if you do Prison Journalism Project on Blue Sky, we have a ton of people who are really engaged there. And our audience engagement editor has been particularly excited about the community developing on Blue Sky. So give us a follow there, too.
Any closing thoughts for the listener?
I'm glad that you're here listening and that you're thinking about folks inside. And I just encourage you in any way you can to reach out, to stay connected, whether it's in your local community, whether it's supporting a national group like PJP. There are real people behind those walls that have really important stories to tell. So thanks for listening to them and for doing anything you can to support their learning and growth.
Good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with Dr. Claire Hamor, Director of Learning at the Prison Journalism Project. While we still have time, one more item. On Friday, April 18th, U.S. Senator Chris Van Hollen held a news conference to discuss his visit to El Salvador to meet with Kilmer Abrego-Garcia. This is the first chance I've had to hear it, so let's listen to part of that.
Si se puede.
Si se puede.
El pueblo unido
jamás será vencido.
El pueblo unido
jamás será vencido.
It's good to be home. Now we need to end the illegal abduction of Kilmer Abrego Garcia and bring him home too. We're joined by his wife, Jennifer, by his mother, Cecilia, by his brother Cesar, and thank all of the rest of you who are joining us in solidarity with the Constitution and Kilmar. Look, I'm a little sleep deprived, and I want to be as clear as possible about what this is about and what it's not about. So I'm going to read the remarks that I wrote on the plane ride home. As the federal courts have said, we need to bring Mr. Abrego Garcia home to protect his constitutional rights to due process. And it's also important that people understand this case is not just about one man. It's about protecting the constitutional rights of everybody who resides in the United States of America. Yes. If you deny the constitutional rights of one man, you threaten the constitutional rights and due process for everyone else in America.
Yes.
The Fourth Circuit put it very clearly in its strong opinion yesterday, and I quote, "It is difficult in some cases to get to the very heart of the matter, but in this case, it is not hard at all. The government, in this case the Trump administration, is asserting a right to stash away residents of this country in foreign prisons without the semblance of due process that is the foundational of our constitutional order. Further, it claims, in essence, that because it has rid itself of custody, that there is nothing that can be done. This should be shocking not only to judges, but to the intuitive sense of liberty that Americans far removed from the courthouses still hold dear." They summed up the issue at stake perfectly. And that's why the Supreme Court, in a 9-0 decision, ordered the Trump administration to facilitate the return of Mr. Abrego Garcia. Now, the Trump administration wants to flat out lie about what this case is about. They want to change the subject. They want to make it about something else. And they are flouting the orders from the Federal District Court, the Fourth Circuit Court, and the Supreme Court to facilitate his return. That's why I traveled to El Salvador, leaving here on Wednesday. And I want to express my gratitude to members of my family and members of my staff who agree that we all must be prepared to take risks because of the current risk to our Constitution itself. In addition to having a variety of discussions on bilateral issues between the United States and El Salvador, I had two main goals. One was to urge the government of El Salvador not to be complicit in the illegal abduction and detention of Mr. Abrego Garcia, and to release him. I made that request directly to the Vice President of El Salvador. The President was out of country at the time, and I've previously reported on that conversation. My principal mission was to meet with Kilmar Abrego Garcia. I told his wife Jennifer and his family that I would do everything in my power to make that happen. And last night, at about 6:40 p.m. El Salvador time, 8:45 p.m. here on the East Coast, I called Jennifer to tell her that I had met with Kilmar. And I told her what he said to me, which was first and foremost that he missed her and his family. And as he said that, you could see a tear go down his cheek. Now, getting a meeting with Kilmar was not easy. On Wednesday, I met with the Vice President of El Salvador and asked if I could meet with him. The answer was no. I asked if I returned the following week whether I could meet with him. The answer was no. I asked if I could call him on the phone? The answer was no. I asked if his wife Jennifer could call him on the phone. The answer was no. No to his wife, no to his mother, no to his lawyers. So the following day, which was yesterday, I decided to give it another try by driving to Sikot. Sikot is the notorious prison where Kilmer was taken when he was abducted. I was accompanied by a lawyer for Kilmer's wife, Jennifer, and mother, Cecilia, Chris Newsom. About 3 kilometers outside of Sikot, we were pulled over by soldiers. You could see the rest of the traffic was allowed to go by. We were pulled over by soldiers and told that we were not allowed to proceed any farther. When I asked why, I was told that they had orders not to allow us to go any further. When I asked them if they knew anything about the condition of Mr. Abrego Garcia, they said no. And so much later in the afternoon, I was actually getting ready to catch a plane out of San Salvador back here later yesterday evening. And all of a sudden, I got word that I would be allowed to meet with Kilmer Abrego Garcia. And they brought him to the hotel where I was staying. And after that meeting, as I said, I called his wife, Jennifer, to report on some of the news of that meeting. And now I'm going to report to all of you about our discussion. When I told him that his wife and family sent their love and were fighting for Kilmer's return home every day, he said that he was worried about all of you. That was his response. How are you dealing with this horrible ordeal and nightmare for the family? He said that thinking of you, members of his family, is what gave him the strength to persevere, to keep going day to day, even under these awful circumstances. He spoke several times about your 5-year-old son who has autism. 5-year-old son who was in the car in Maryland when Kilmer was pulled over by U.S. government agents and handcuffed. His 5-year-old son was in the car at that time.
That was U.S. Senator Chris Van Hollen at a news conference Friday, April 18th, on his return from El Salvador, where he met with Kilmer Abrego Garcia, who was illegally abducted by U.S. agents as part of our country's disgraceful attack on human rights, civil rights, and the rule of law. And for now, that's it. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline is a volunteer production for community radio, syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. You'll also find a link there to subscribe to the Prison Pipeline podcast. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give its page a like. Share it with friends. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!